C1A. Number 14B.
And then come and give the sense of truth, principless truth, as it says, that atonement demands the divine nature of man and the unity of the divine nature in man, the Christ. It is the divinity of the man, Jesus, was his godliness which animated him, which gave him authority. See, as here she says again that sense, you see, as she says, oh no, not that we say that principle is spiritual power, that doesn't give us any authority, not that it's principle as truth says, but if you know that the godliness and the divinity of manhood, which is present and which is a present fact, we atone with that. That has a thought. And each one of us knows it. Each one of us knows that. I know it. But each one of us has experienced that more or less, but have experienced that. That if we atone ourselves with the divine sense of man and of our individuality, the divinity of the beauty and holiness of our manhood, that then somehow the burden falls from our shoulders. That somehow then we get a sense that we stand above the mortal sense of man. It gives us a sense of authority. And then, lastly, principle as love points out that atonement demands as fulfillment what? The work of God, of love. Atonement demands as the fulfillment, not the work of what we wish to be fulfilled, but the reign of love. The plan of love, the working out of the plan of love. It is a complete selflessness which comes in and says, I must atone with that sense that I put away all selfishness and have that unself love which says, God's plan be worked out, whatever it brings. And where she says that God is the power in the messianic work. First time she says that God is power in the messianic work. Where we have to prove the divine principle to be love. Where we don't have to prove the divine principle to be the servant of our ambition, the servant of our wish, servant of our egoistic wishes and desires. But where we have that greatness, where we say, thy will be done. And that we want to prove nothing else but God's plan be worked out. That's a very important and big point. Now, we can see here, you see, how she develops that sequence, that whole tone of atonement with principle, how that works, that works through spiritual power. And that we, you see, it ends with that mighty statement that we have prove the divine principle to be love, to be God, that God is to be worked out, that God's plan is to be worked out, and that we let God's plan be worked out. But how? How do we rise through the 7 days, through the 7 subtles? How do we rise to that big sublime standpoint? And that's the purpose of the sequence in it. And she says, well, how do you get there? Says, well, it starts with revelation. In order to atone, therefore, with principle spiritual power, we have to be to acquaint ourselves with the word of revelation. That's why we study the Bible. That's why we study the Bible lovingly, honestly, dearly, devotedly, and take and try study the Bible as the revelation of God. Then, in spirit, we begin to see that this word of revelation must be understood in its spiritual meaning, and that we don't let it be polluted by a theological interpretation, or by a spiritualistic interpretation, or today by a psychological interpretation. Today, every sort of pseudoscience is taking hold of the Bible. Everyone is going back to the Bible. Psychology and naturally theology always has done that, and medicine is going back to the Bible, psychosomatic medicine is going back to the Bible. From all sides, they are going back to the Bible. And that seems to be a big step forward, but one has to be careful. See, what she says here is, let's atone with the spiritual interpretation of it, and not with the theological, and not with the spiritualistic. And today she may say, not with a psychological sense of it, and not with a medical sense of it, and not with any psychosomatic sense of it. They all go back. to the Bible. But it won't have, I have never seen anybody who has gained spiritual power from it unless one takes the spiritual meaning of it, which is pure in its sense. Then she goes on and says, and the moment as we take its spiritual interpretation and begin to understand its spiritual interpretation, it works changes. It cleanses us from sin. See, again, when we come to the third, it begins to do something in us, begins to work something in us. It has transforming power. And then she goes and says, but this, in principle, as principle says, but this transforming power is made available more and more and more through our obedience to the command, to the divine command, and not through obedience to people or doctrine, to personal teachers and so on. So it comes to the point that always more and more this obedience has to be exemplified, has to be shown forth. But the more we are obedient to the divine fact, the more we have inwardly the desire to atone with principle, the more we will have experiences and go through experience and will have to go through experience, because principle is life. Principle cannot be without life. Principle ushers us into a new life, and therefore it says, therefore you go through experience which rids you, which cleanses you from a false sense of mortal life and human life, in order that you get quite a new sense of life, a divine sense of life. And as we go through this experience, and as we go again through this experience, and more through experience, what happens? We atone ourselves always more and more with the divine in us, with the divinity in us, the godliness in us, the divine nature in us, the Christ in us. That's what she says in Principle as Truth, that through this life experience, man is more and more atoned and equipped with, atoned with the true sense of manhood, and therefore more and more equipped with the authority over sin, sickness, and death. And then he says, but for what? For what purpose? What is the purpose of it? Says, well, the purpose of it is not the selfish purpose. The purpose of divine love. To prove that God, that principle is love. To prove the plan of love. And it means naturally our complete application of human self, human love, and human will, and everything. The divine must overcome the human at every point. Can you see that the wonderful sequence of such a subject? It's a fundamental sequence, and it's a sequence which comes over and over and over again, just with a slight little touch according to the chart. But it's the fundamental order of our being, and we jolly well have to disperse to our being. The textbook has quite a different message than the Bible. The Bible has the message in the Old Testament to show to us that there is a God. And the New Testament, the Gospel, show us that we can be one with the God, with that God. And the epistles and the time of Christianity show us that we can use this unity with God, that it is something tangible. But the textbook comes and teaches us the science that is the ordered way of how to give birth to our true men. The textbook doesn't have as its main, don't misunderstand, it hasn't as its main subject to prove that there is a God. The Bible has done that. But it is showing to us how the way, the scientific way, the ordered way, how to give birth to our true manhood, who is, or which is, one with God, and can use that oneness with God, and can use that oneness with God for what? For the glorification of God. So the textbook without the Bible would hang in the air, as we say in German. I don't know what you say. It would be disconnected, would miss the basis. The Bible is the foundation on which the textbook stands, and for which the textbook is the complementary, that which is complementary, yes. So, what else have we here? Yes, let's also see the connection of the fourth day with the fourth statement in the commandment. See, the fourth day said, let there be light, and the firmament, and the earth, and all that is one. We get there the symbolism of the first day, and the second day, and the third day turned into one. Principle is always that which turns mind, spirit, soul into one. For what? For one purpose, to express itself as life, truth, and love. It is showing here the one, that there is one sixth, that the first, second, and third day are not disconnected facts, but that they are one, turned into one, connected into one sixth, working together, related and interrelated with each other. Then comes the commandment, he says, and showing mercy unto thousands that love me and keep my commandments. Says, it shows that if we obey this system, that it reduces itself to everyone, to thousands, that it is one system, but that it is one system applicable to thousands. It demonstrates itself always, that system demonstrates itself always to those that keep the commandments. Shows, well, the days of education still as the system, the commandments come and say, all right, obey that system. Then it works for each one of you, showing mercy. See, that's individual. That system can be individual, can be for each one of the thousands, can be each one for the infinite individuality. We had the same thing, if you remember well, in prayer. When you came to the fourth prayer, we saw that what she explained in the fourth prayer was that she turned the first, second, and third prayer into one, and said, unless we have the three prayers, the first three prayers in one go, we will not be a principled person. We will not be a consistent personality in the true sense of person as sounding through. That the first three must always sound through a true personality. What does that involve? An Atonement Eucharist says, well, that involves something, namely, that we are going to be obedient to that and disobedient to any other personal sense of it. Therefore, we have what it involves here. It involves that if prayer says that we have to be a principal personality based on mind, spirit, soul, if we have to be a principal personality, that involves in us the Eucharist, namely that we disobey any other so-called system or theory or dogma or principle. And here in Atonement Eucharist you have that. It's showing that obedience to the one system, to the scientific system, involves disobedience to the theological interpretation of atonement. To the theological interpretation of atonement, which has been shown as something which relies on a human concept of the Bible, on a material or literal interpretation of the Bible, on the material sacrifice, blood sacrifice of Jesus, on a personal obedience, or on an obedience to a person, Jesus, that it is, that it bases itself on the fact that another person has gone through all experience for us, and that we don't have to go through all the experience, and so on. You see, it was a false sense of atonement, theological sense. And so it demands from us, showing mercy unto thousands that keep my commandments. Again here, you see, I remember how I pointed out now, about half an hour ago, how in this fourth subject she always shows that atoning ourselves with the scientific constituents of atonement, that the divinely scientific constituents of atonement has the power of demonstration in itself, has the power of demonstration in itself, and brings out new life. Was always showing it is the principle of all being, it's the principle, it's the chart of life, becomes the chart of life. Was always connected with life, that principle. Exactly like the command itself, showing mercy. We know the tone of mercy as life, showing mercy unto thousands that keep the commandment. That's the point, you see, the connection of principle with life. That if we want to have mercy, that if we want to have life, just have to fulfill first the principle. It only shows mercy unto thousands that keep my commandment. That we only have a new sense, and come into a new sense, and are pushed into a new sense in the measure as we keep the principle, which is mind, spirit, soul. That is the mercy. And therefore, the thousands, the individual way of demonstration that come to us, the thousands of ways that demonstration comes to us, comes always on the basis of one principle and one system, not on thousand principles and a thousand systems. You remember how I made a point out of that on the very first talk I gave in September, because from my experience, from what I have seen in my teaching and so on and work, I have seen the danger of wanting an individual way without first having a principle. Because the drive to be individual is naturally something very wonderful. But the drive to be individual without first having the one principle is a catastrophe, is a catastrophe. And here it shows there is only mercy, the mercy of life there, where there is obedience to the one thing. And atonement here shows, it says, there is only the principle which brings, which ushers us into life, which pushes us into life, which really, really pushes us into life, is obedience to a principle. Now, I make a break here.